You're listening to ESL Podcast English Cafe, number 293. This is English as a Second Language Podcast. English Cafe, episode 293. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful, and I do mean beautiful, Los Angeles, California. Visit our website at eslpod.com. Why? Well, because you can download a learning guide for this episode, an 8 to 10 page guide that will help you improve your English and give you long, healthy hair like mine. On this cafe, we're going to continue our series on famous Americans, talking about a man named Al Capone. We're also going to talk about the most famous military college in the United States, the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. This cafe begins with a continuation of our series on famous Americans. Today we're going to talk about Al Capone, whose full name was Alphonse Gabriel Capone. He was called Al for short. Al, A-L, can be used for a name like Alphonse or Alfonso. It could be used for a name like Albert, which is probably a little more common, at least historically in the U.S. In any case, Al Capone was born in Brooklyn, which is part of New York City in the state of New York, in 1899 to a family of Italian immigrants. There were millions of Italians who came as immigrants to the United States in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Many of them began their life here, living in the cities in the eastern coast of the U.S., including especially the city of New York, but also Boston, Philadelphia, and other places. Capone was born in New York to a family of Italian immigrants. He dropped out of school, that is, he left school, when he was 14 years old. To drop out means to stop attending or stop going to school. He was only 14, although that was not unusual at that time. The average American did not graduate from high school. In fact, it wasn't until after World War II that the majority of Americans were graduating from high school. In any case, Capone worked several odd jobs. An odd, O-D-D, job refers to one of several jobs that are not professional, usually not requiring a lot of skill, a lot of knowledge or talent. In addition, they are not related. I may work as I did when I was in college. One day I would be working in an office, and the next day I might be working in a factory. I worked for what's called a temporary agency, so you get a different job almost every day. Well, that wasn't the case for Al Capone. He didn't work for a temporary agency, but he did have many different kinds of jobs. He worked in a candy store. He worked at a bowling alley, a place where you bowl, you throw a ball down a long section of wood in order to knock down what are called pins. That's one of the jobs Al had. But his true profession, the one that he found, I guess you could say, the most success at, was being a gangster. A gang, G-A-N-G, is a group of people, usually young men, who are involved in illegal, unlawful activities. Usually they are trying to make money. They are often intimidating or scaring other people into giving them money. Someone who is a member of a gang is called a gangster. More recently, at least in the 80s and 90s, members of modern gangs, if you will, here in Los Angeles or New York City, were called gangbangers. But the older term is gangster. A gangster named Johnny Torrio became Al Capone's mentor. A mentor, M-E-N-T-O-R, is when one person with lots of experience in something helps someone who is younger than them, teaches them things. It's many times an informal relationship. They are helping the less experienced person learn things and develop their career. We usually talk about mentors when we're talking about business or medicine or teaching, but in this case, the mentor was a gangster. Capone started as a member of several small, relatively unimportant gangs, but soon he became part of a gang known as the Five Points Gang. At that time, he worked in a dance hall and what we now call a bar. An old word for bar is saloon, S-A-L-O-O-N. In that job, Capone got into a lot of fights and ended up receiving many cuts to his body, especially his face. When you cut your skin and it's a deep, serious cut, it will often leave a mark on your skin. We call that mark a scar, S-C-A-R. Well, Al Capone had a lot of scars on his face, and some people, in fact, called him Scarface. In 1923, Capone moved to the city of Chicago, which is in the central part of the United States. Chicago is sometimes called the second city in terms of importance after New York City. Capone had a wife and a son by this time, by 1923. His gangster mentor had asked him to come to Chicago to help him with some family problems. Shortly after he arrived, the gang members who were creating these problems were murdered, were killed, and many people suspected or thought that the guilty person, the person who committed the crimes, was Al Capone. But Capone was not arrested. Capone also got involved in Chicago's politics, which were, at that time, some people say still, very corrupt. Corrupt, C-O-R-R-U-P-T, means that politicians do things for people who pay them illegally and secretly. Many people believe that the politics of Chicago was corrupt throughout the 20th century. Some people might say it's still corrupt, but it is famous in American history for being a city of political corruption. This was the time, 1923, of prohibition, the period of time where it was illegal to make, sell, or buy alcohol in the United States. We've talked about prohibition a couple of different times on English Cafe 66, on English Cafe 134, I think on English Cafe 153. So I'm not going to talk about that here. But prohibition was an excellent opportunity for gangsters like Al Capone to make a lot of money transporting and selling alcohol illegally. In the mid-1920s, Al Capone's gang-related businesses were bringing in or were gaining or getting revenue of about $100 million per year. Revenue is just another way of saying the money that your company takes in, what it sells, the money it gets for what it sells, whether that's a thing, a product, or an activity, a service. Capone was making $100 million a year on his activities. He used this wealth, this large amount of money, to have more power in Chicago. He would bribe politicians. Bribing, B-R-I-B-I-N-G, comes from the verb to bribe. It means to give politicians or someone in power money so that they will do what you want them to do. And remember, Chicago was considered a very corrupt city politically. Other gangs became jealous of the money that Capone was making and the power that he was attaining, he was getting, and they started to attack Al Capone's gang. They wanted some of that money and power for themselves. The gangs became more and more violent. More and more killings, murders were taking place. The violence culminated, that is, it reached its maximum or highest point, on February 14th, 1929. In what became known as the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. St. Valentine's Day, February 14th, is normally a day for lovers. It is a day for romance between a boy and a girl, a husband and a wife, and so forth. Well, St. Valentine's Day in 1929 had a massacre. A massacre. M-A-S-S-A-C-R-E, is when many people are killed at the same time. On that day, 7 people were killed in a garage, in a place where you normally park cars, but no one was ever taken to court for it. No one was ever found guilty of the murders. But many people thought Al Capone was responsible for the St. Valentine's Day massacre. The word massacre is not normally used for 7 or 8 people. It is here. A massacre is nowadays usually tens or hundreds of people. But it was, of course, a terrible crime, and people thought Al Capone was responsible. Throughout this time, the government tried to catch Capone. They tried to convict Capone, that is, find him guilty and send him to prison, especially for violating the laws of prohibition. But they were not able to lock him up. To lock someone up is, in this case, to arrest him, that is, to put them in jail. To lock up can just mean to close a door, for example, so no one can get into it. But if you are talking about a person, I'm going to lock him up, or he was locked up. Usually that means that he is in prison, in jail. Capone was finally locked up in 1931, and it wasn't for crimes of murder or violating prohibition. It was for tax evasion. To evade, E-V-A-D-E, means to avoid, to not do something you're supposed to do. Tax evasion is when you don't pay the taxes that you are supposed to the government. Capone was released from prison in 1939, but by then he had lost most of his power. He was very sick at the end of his life, and he died in 1947. Capone is the most famous and most notorious gangster in American history. Notorious means that you are famous, but famous in a bad way, famous for something you did wrong. The word is now used often to mean the same as famous, not in a bad way, but the original meaning was, in fact, that you were famous for doing something wrong. Capone became so powerful and so rich, so wealthy, that he was actually admired by many people, even though he was breaking the law, even though he was killing people. Sometimes Capone would give money to people who were poor, and this was reported in the news, in the newspaper, and on radio. And that caused some people to think that Capone was perhaps a good guy rather than a bad guy. Even today, many people are fascinated by Al Capone, and many movies and books have been dedicated to or have been about Capone. Now, after talking about gangsters and crime, let's turn to our next topic, which is the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, what is known more commonly simply as West Point. The United States has 5 academies, they're colleges, really, universities, which are for people who are in the armed forces, in the Army, the Navy, the Marines, and so forth. West Point is the oldest military academy. It was created by President Thomas Jefferson, our third president, in the year 1802. West Point is the military academy for the largest part of the American military, historically, the U.S. Army. If you want to study at West Point, you have to apply, you have to submit an application, but it isn't just any kind of application. You actually have to be nominated by someone in our U.S. Congress, a House of Representatives in our Senate, or by the President himself. You don't have to know these people, but you do have to give your information to their offices, and they will select people that they will nominate to the Academy. A good friend of mine's brother was nominated to another military academy, the United States Air Force Academy in Colorado. So congressmen and congresswomen nominate men and women between the ages of 17 and 23 for the military academies, in this case for West Point. You have to pass a physical examination. You have to be able to participate as a member of the armed forces. You cannot be married, and you cannot have children if you are accepted. Of course, after, you can get married and have children eventually, but not when you are first entering into the academy. The students who are admitted to West Point are training to be, or studying to be, military officers. When they are at the academy, they are known as cadets, C-A-D-E-T-S. A cadet is an officer in training, someone who is preparing to be an officer. About 1,300 cadets enter West Point each year, and about 1,000 of them finish 4 years later with a Bachelor of Science degree. Cadets to our military academies like West Point do not have to pay for their schooling. They don't have to pay tuition. The government pays all of the expenses. However, the person in the military academy has to serve in the military a certain number of years after. So it isn't exactly free. You get a free education, but you have to remain a member of the military for a certain amount of time. All the cadets live on campus, that is, where the school is located, for all 4 years. They are required to participate in athletics. Football, for example, is very popular among the men. Ethics and morals are considered very important at West Point, and the cadets have to agree not to lie, cheat, or steal, and not tolerate those who do, that is, not allow their friends and others to do so. West Point has very high standards, traditionally, high expectations for its students. The graduates tend to be very successful, especially in the U.S. military, which is, of course, the reason why they are going there. There have been many very famous Americans who have gone to West Point, who have graduated from West Point. Former U.S. presidents Ulysses S. Grant and Dwight D. Eisenhower were graduates of West Point. Many governors, congressional representatives, and of course, military generals, the leaders in the army, almost all of them are graduates of West Point. It used to be that West Point was only for men, but in 1976, West Point admitted its first female cadets. Today, about 15% of the cadets are women, so it is still a mostly male institution. West Point is one of those things that you will hear mentioned in the news or read about in a story, and now you have a little background on it. It is the most famous U.S. military college for the U.S. Army. Now let's answer some of your questions. Our first question comes from Marina, M-A-R-I-N-A, in Bulgaria. Marina wants to know the meaning and the differences of the words crash, shatter, and smash. Crash, C-R-A-S-H, as a verb, means to hit something and to make it break loudly, or to cause things to hit each other and to break loudly. It's often used when talking about a car hitting another car or hitting something else and making a loud sound. The two cars crashed into each other yesterday. In fact, there was a movie called Crash about Los Angeles that involved a car crash. To crash can mean simply to make a loud noise, even if something doesn't break. For example, we use this verb in talking about the waves in the ocean when the water crashes against the rocks. It makes a loud sound, and that is another use of the verb. To shatter, S-H-A-T-T-E-R, means to break into many pieces, many smaller pieces, while making a loud sound. We usually use this verb in talking about glass or something that when it breaks into many small pieces. If you have a mirror on the wall and it falls to the ground, it will shatter. It will break up into small pieces. We sometimes use this verb metaphorically or somewhat poetically even. You could say, for example, my girlfriend left me and it shattered my heart. My heart was broken up into 1,000 little pieces. Then, of course, you meet another girl. You don't have to worry, right? Smash, S-M-A-S-H, is to destroy something or break something. It's usually with a loud noise, but not always. It could mean that, for example, one army defeated another army. They completely defeated them. When it comes to breaking things, then, crash, shatter, and smash are all very useful words that have some specific meanings, typically. Crash, more than anything, is a noise word. It emphasizes the noise that is made. Shatter is all about breaking up into small pieces. Smash is all about the destruction, destroying something completely. There's another meaning for the word crash in informal English, and that would be to sleep. I was so tired last night, I crashed at about 9:30. That means I fell asleep about 9:30. Or you might say, I'm visiting my cousin in Honolulu. He has a couch where I can crash, a place where I can sleep. I wish I had a cousin in Honolulu, but I don't. I have one in Minnesota, so there you go. Edie, I-D-I, now living in Egypt, wants to know the difference between two expressions, how about you and what about you? How about or what about you can both be used to ask your thoughts or feelings about something. For example, how about a cup of coffee? What you're saying to the person is, do you want to get a cup of coffee? Do you feel like getting a cup of coffee? You could also say, what about a cup of coffee? It is a little less common in that context, but you could still say that and mean the same thing. How about you is a little more common than what about you. When you're asking about how someone feels or what someone thinks about a certain topic, sometimes these expressions can be used to ask about you. What are your feelings about you, about yourself, we should say. What about you? What are you thinking? Finally, Karimov, K-A-R-I-M-O-V, in Uzbekistan, wants to know the meaning of the expression, bite me, to bite, B-I-T-E, something, is to put it in your mouth and use your teeth to go into the object. However, the general meaning of this very informal slang, rude and somewhat vulgar expression is, I don't accept what you say. It's a way of responding to someone who has insulted you. Someone says something bad about you, and you want to tell them to go away. You want to insult them back. For example, your team lost the baseball game. You guys are terrible. And you could respond, bite me. Now, it's a very rude thing to say. Teenagers and young adults might say this. You won't hear people my age say it. You might, but it's not very common. It's become more common. As I say, it's very rude, and you would probably be best never to use it. It can be used sometimes jokingly among friends, but again, I would caution you about that. I would say you probably are best not using the expression. You may read it or hear it in a movie, and as I said, generally speaking, it means go away or shut up or get out of here, something like that. If you have a question or comment, you can email us. Our email address is ESLPOD@ESLPOD.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you for listening. Come back and listen to us again on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Say. Copyright 2011 by the Center for Educational Development.